Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today I'm chatting with Bree Flora, who specializes in jewelry and metalsmithing. Is metalsmithing a word?
Yes, it is.
Fabulous.
So sometimes it gets underlined red.
Yeah. All right, Bree, just move closer to the mic.
You're sorry. Hello, everyone.
All right. Bree, I'm really excited to have you. I've been stalking you for a while, trying to get you on the show, and Bree is very respectful of her craft and her time. So if the weather is, it's a good day and you've got shows coming up, you just tell me no. And finally I got a yes.
So I know. And then I walked outside today and I was like, wow, it is a nice day, but I'm not powder coating today, so it's fine.
It was canceled on me. All right, cool. But anyway, so I'm like thrilled to have you. So Bree, tell me about your what it is exactly you make. You make jewelry and it's extremely unique. I've never seen anything like it. How would you describe your style?
I mean, there's so many different types of jewelry. So, you know, a lot of people are more familiar with fine jewelry, which is a lot of diamonds, platinum, gold. And then there's the costume jewelry that we all know as well. But I like to say that mine's just wearable art, so art jewelry, and that is a term some contemporary jewelers use, so contemporary jewelry as well, but so it kind of falls between the costume jewelry and the fine jewelry, not to say that it's any less valuable than, you know, fine jewelry, but it's, I don't use money stones, I don't use diamonds for sure, but yeah, all hand fabricated.
And so what is the process of creating the jewelry?
Like the actual process or also my thinking behind it?
Everything.
Actual physical process. So I primarily do a lot of fabricating. So I don't do any casting in my work. I don't do any 3D printing and I don't do any laser cutting. I've played around with it a little bit for one of my pieces, but I'm not sure if I'm going to do that. So what that means is I either do wire working or piercing, and piercing is sawing out metal. So taking sheet and wire and sawing it, bending it, folding it, and soldering it together to get my final piece. And I do work in silver. So if I do silver, I'll sometimes patina that with a liver of sulfur. There's tons of different kinds, but that just makes the silver like a dark gray color, kind of black, and I'll rub that back, but mostly I've been powder coating, so that's the color that you're used to, and I do that over brass.
So what's the process of powder coating?
So it is a powder, and it's basically like a plastic paint that needs two things, heat and then static electricity. So I hang them up on this jig I make, and positive, negative, and then you spray it out. So it's like a gun. It's kind of like airbrush. Hmm. What are those, right? Airbrush when the t-shirts where you go down to like Dollywood and stuff and you get the shirt. It looks like that, but it's different. And so I spray it on.
Let's hope so.
Yes. So it sprays on in a powder. And when the powder comes out of the gun, since it's a static electric charge, it's charged powder and it gets kind of sucked to the piece. Mm. But then it could be wiped off or blown off. So then you put it in an oven. I use like a toaster oven. I bought it from Eastwood, which is like a company that sells this stuff, but it is essentially a toaster oven. You can use one.
So it's for jewelry or it's for cooking?
Mine's for jewelry. And even if you buy one that's for cooking,
you can still
use it, but never use it for eating again because it needs to cure in there. So it does melt and then there's fumes and it's toxic. Okay. So I wear a respirator.
Oh, wow.
But yeah.
So how did you learn this technique?
I took a class at Aramont, shout out, with Rachel Shimpok. She's awesome. She's another jeweler. She's out on the West Coast, but she specializes in powder coating and enameling. So I saw that she was teaching that class and I kind of just jumped on it because I was like, you know, I was just doing sterling silver work and I was enjoying it, but I've never been, like I was saying before to you, back when I was an undergrad, I did a lot more sculptural work. So making jewelry was almost forced for a little while for me because I was like, wow, I need to make a living, so I should make jewelry with the skills I have. But I was getting bored with just this oxidized sterling. And I wanted to be able to do something new. So I was like, okay, color. And hopefully I'll like it. So I took the class. And it changed the whole way I thought about my work. Like, the whole process of me designing a piece changed. And I'm still learning. I've only been doing powder coating for about a year and a half. So it's new for me, but it's definitely taken over.
Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today we are chatting with Jason Jenkins of The Painted Bristle. Do you ever take pieces of furniture, like, say, I don't know, I'll just use an example, say, like, in a buffet, and then you restore it and maybe turn it into, like, a TV stand? Now, that's just an example, but do you ever...
So I've taken dressers that just take the drawers out, and then sometimes I add a shelf in there. A lot of times there's already something there. Stain the inside of it, drill a couple holes in the back for the wires. You can put your DVD player, cable, satellite box, and it gives you lots of storage in those drawers for all the things you don't want shown to people, like all your DVDs or games, kids' toys even. That's worked out good. A lot of antique chest dressers make great accent pieces or entry hall when you walk in the door and it's the first thing you see. So instead of using them for clothing in the bedroom, you can use them for storage for different holidays throughout the year, or just storage, you know, your junk drawer that everybody has. You can use it for that. But that's the probably the most popular pieces, is just small chests, dressers, and turn them into buffets.
Do you have a favorite type of furniture that you just, that you like love to restore?
Anything with lots of detail. Mm. You know, the buffets with the big chunky legs, vanities with the intricate mirror, stuff like that. Anything that if a client says, hey, I got this piece of furniture, I want you to just let loose on it. I'm not even going to tell you what I want. I want it white. Everything else, you just do yourself. I love that. I love that control.
Do you use the dark wax?
Occasionally, if a client wants that little extra detail, something that has some crevices where that dark wax gets into, I love using it. I think a lot of clients are scared to use that. Sometimes I'll mix the clear and the dark wax together so it's there, but it's not very defined. Mm-hmm. But when I try to sell pieces, I like using the dark wax when I can.
Oh, I do. I like it all just roughed up and dirty and looks old and worn.
Yeah. Looks like you got it from the dump.
Totally. Yeah. But it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's been dumped off and gorgeous. What is the process involved in restoring an old heirloom that has sentimental value to your client?
So, I mean, the first thing you gotta do is clean it. If you don't clean it, especially with white, it will turn it a dingy green, black color. So clean it really good. Sometimes you do have to prime it. If it's a mahogany or cherry, white will turn pink. And that's, it don't matter if you have four or five coats on it, you have to prime it. And a lot of times you don't know that until you've done painting it. So once you've done that, you can go ahead and if the client wants the stain top, you got to sand it down, stain it and poly it. And then you tape it and you go ahead and paint usually about 3 to 4 coats. And then you sand it all over, get it really smooth. And then on the edges and detail areas, you can take a palm sander or a sandpaper and just kind of hit those edges, make those intricate details stick out. Mm-hmm. Once that's done, you just wax it.
So I've noticed in your style, you will leave the tops bare sometimes, but you will stain them. So is that something that you'll ask your client prior? Do you want to leave the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it costs us a little bit more, just more labor put into it. I always prefer that if we can. Sometimes you don't know that you can until you've done it. A lot of 70s, 80s, and 90s, the wood, it looks like real wood. I mean, you can knock on it, do whatever you want to it. It's real wood until you sand it, put the stain on, and you realize the stain's not sticking. It's not real wood.
So it has to be real wood to put that stain on there.
It has to be real wood or really good veneer. If it's wood veneer, if it's factory made veneer, a lot of times it will not stick.
Well, thank you so much for coming out. We appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing more of your creations online. Speaking of that, where can we find your work?
You can find me on Facebook. Look up The Painted Bristle.
And you do some giveaways too, don't you?
We have. Anytime that I reach a
Like milestone,
whether it be 1,000 or 2,000. I tried to give away something. We recently gave away desk at a fall festival at the White County Middle School last weekend, and all proceeds went to the middle school baseball team. That was really good. So yeah, I like to do something for the people every once in a while.
Nice. Very nice. And are you on Instagram too, or just Facebook?
I'm not. I need to branch out.
Yeah.
I feel old. I've not Instagrammed yet.
Yeah. Tag Annie Sloan. She's on Instagram.
She is.
I know.
She is.
She see your beautiful work, and you never know, your whole career could just could launch.
Change.
You'll be a millionaire, and
that would be wonderful.
Life will be great. All right. Thank you so much, Jason.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today I'm chatting with Bree Flora. And so what's the process if somebody wants to commission you to do some jewelry? What's the process they would go through?
So a lot of times, you know, I always tell people, send me an email. I'm always open, but I do say, you know, I will tell you honestly if it's something I'm willing to do or even available to do. Because a lot of people think, oh, you're a jeweler. You can do anything. And I'm like, no. But I will point you in the direction of maybe a jeweler that can. So I've had a lot of people contact me about, you know, taking apart rings. And though I've done that in the past, it's not what I want to do. Take your family heirloom diamonds to somebody who specializes in that.
I agree.
But if somebody likes my work or they have an idea that they think my style would be right for, yeah, please contact me. And basically the most recent one I had, I was at a show in Third Ward, Milwaukee, and a client saw a pair of earrings and she was like, wow, I love those earrings. And it was a pair that I had started doing drawing on top of the powder coat and baking that in. So Sharpie and some other drawing utensils will work, like graphite, and you bake it in and it'll stay permanent. So I did do like a one-of-a-kind drawing. And she's like, I love these, but I would never wear it as an earring. And I was like, okay. And she did. She was buying some other stuff. She was like, they're just too big, but would you be willing to do this as a pendant? Something like it, but maybe a little different. And I was like, yes, that's right up my alley. So I did that for her, and it was really fun because I got to do the same drawing again, but slightly different. And, you know, that's more fun for me, and then it's also fun for the person because they're getting something that's truly one of a kind. So that's my favorite type of work to do, honestly, sometimes, is either a commission piece like that or just one of a kind work. So a lot of times my necklaces will be one of a kind, or sometimes brooches.
Yeah.
Occasionally earrings, but.
So what are all the different jewelry? What's all the different jewelry that you offer?
Mostly earrings, my biggest seller. So I have a lot of earrings. I spend a lot of time making the earrings. And then I like to do, like I said, necklaces, because a lot of time I'll either do, that's the one time sometimes in my work you'll see something that's pre-bought, by the way. I will buy chain for some of my necklaces. That is a way for me to make it more affordable. Hmm. But I mostly like to make my own chain. So that's where it becomes one of a kind, and I'll make my own chain and the clasp and the pendant. But even if you get a necklace that has bought chain, the clasp is still handmade and the pendant is. But I do that so that it can be a little more affordable, because handmade chain is wild.
Yeah, but you have some people that, you know, want that.
Yeah. So
they
I do
don't
both.
Mind.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you asked what I, okay, earrings, brooches, rings, necklaces. A lot of people ask me, where are your bracelets? I make them sometimes, but I don't like making bracelets.
Then don't make them.
Why
don't you like making them?
Wrists are weird and oddly sized. And just like a ring, you know, when I go to a craft show, if I'm making a one-of-a-kind ring or a ring that's kind of like intricate, it's hard to make that over and over again so many sizes. Earrings fit everybody.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, sometimes the size or the weight preference wise. Necklaces, you know, you got to think size. Everybody's necks are different too, but it's not as much of a wrist. And I just don't like wearing bracelets myself. So I think that's why I don't think of making them. But, you know, I will.
Do you offer any training or workshops for people who want to learn?
Yeah, I'm starting to. So I've taught before at a few places in Massachusetts before I moved down here. And then I just taught a workshop at the Craft Center. But I have a really big studio, so I'm working on getting it open and available to teach up to 4 to 5 students. So right now I don't have like running classes, but I do, you know, I've promoted to contact me. I've got somebody coming in that I've just started teaching a private lesson to, and that's flexible. Like, we just met, and not, now we might not meet until after the new year.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, you know, I'm working with her.
Yeah.
But during Art Prowl, I don't know if you saw, they had like the raffle thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know who won it, but somebody did.
What are they going to get?
They're getting a free stacker ring workshop. So usually, you know, they'd pay my hourly fee, but all they're going to be paying is the material cost, and it's for 5 of them. And so it's a stacker ring workshop, learning how to make their own sterling silver stacker rings with putting on some little stones and stuff like that, and then pizza and wine or sparkling.
That's pretty fun.
The Scene, brought to you by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. It's where we discover and uncover artists and their art from around the Upper Cumberland.
Welcome to The Scene. I'm Emily Newman, and I am here with Donna Rizzo, and Donna specializes in clay sculpting. She has a wide variety of subject matter. I'm quite impressed with what she does, and we're going to have story time here. We're going to look through some of her pieces, and she's going to tell us what's going on. The first piece that caught my eye was, we have a carousel, and at the top it looks like a little girl, there she is, and she's got a bow on top of her head. And then it leads into children on a carousel, and it's really special. So tell us the story behind this.
Okay, so I like things to move because I was a dancer, and I had a children's dance company also. And so we did a lot of work fooling with swinging. And so this you turn at the top, and it goes around, and these little dolls swing and spin.
And so how did you figure out, I see you have a peg here to make it spin, but did that take a little while to figure?
Yes, it took a long time. And in fact, I have a friend that's really smart, and he said, why don't you get that little ball bearing up there and make it go around? Yeah, you always have to have help in the technical stuff, because I really just enjoy making and coming up with the ideas.
And then over here, we have another carousel. We see some animals. Is that like a horse and a rooster?
I know it is. Each horse, one has a chicken on it riding, and the other has a dog. And then we have a little girl holding the pony, and that's called Hold Your Horses. And then it has a post in the middle, and I took my mother-in-law, who was 96, old buttons, and made button flowers to go in the top.
I'm also looking at a absolutely gorgeous vase. And it was the first piece that caught my eye. They're all beautiful, but this one is especially beautiful, and it has imprints on it, and you told me that it would be great to have a rose right in the middle. What's the process that you go through to create this vase?
I make a small mold, and then I take a piece of clay and press it across this little mold, and it's all very intricate so that you can't really see what, it's just texture more. And then I applique it on a slab, and it becomes a beautiful dress. I'd use black glaze, wipe off, and then you see some of the raw clay underneath, and then the black sheen coming through. And I high-fire that one so that you can put water in it, and a rose. The rose looks like the woman's face, and she's in the dress.
That's so beautiful. She has what she calls the church ladies. And tell us about this series.
Well, this is a series that I've been doing for a while, and I throw the bases, and then I add the tops, and the tops are always different animals. And sometimes I put a hat on their head, or sometimes a rose on their face, or sometimes their little paws are sticking out. But it's all thrown except for the animal heads on top.
And then the duo ballet. So we have an elephant here, and around the elephant's trunk, there is a lady, and she's swinging from the elephant's trunk. It's beautiful. What's the story behind this one?
I was really wanting to do some circus things, and it all started because someone gave me all these buttons. And so I started gluing buttons in the eyes, and that's kind of where it came from.
Well, thank you so much, Donna. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Helping guide you on the path to a new craft. It's your art on the scene.
Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today I'm chatting with Bree Flora. So when you teach your classes, are you teaching people how to make the earrings the way that you make them, the jewelry? Because that's your thing.
Yeah, no, I did have somebody say, oh, so in the stacker ring, we'll be able to make these colored ones like yours? And I was like, no.
No. Sorry.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. So my second major was art education. So I do have a teaching background. You know, I haven't done a ton with it, but there's that fine line. Okay, you have a craft. You want to share it with people, but you don't want to give away
all your secrets.
But I try to be pretty transparent.
Yeah.
I try to be transparent with how my business is going, how I do it a show, and then also how I make my stuff. Because mm-hmm. I think that sometimes it can get really competitive and nasty out there. But I mean, I'll show them how to do stuff, but then I have to remember, okay, even if they know how I make my work, you know, I always say to myself, well, good luck trying to go and sell it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they can be inspired by me, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has their own touch, and you can't get too upset if somebody makes something who learns from you. Unless you look at it and you're like, wow, they're really ripping me off. But
yeah.
I just hope that won't happen.
I hope it won't happen either. I think the most important thing is, you know, I've taught art classes and done private lessons. And I say, look, I've got my own signature style.
Right.
Find your signature style.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's our job to help them.
Yeah. If you imitate me or if you imitate somebody else, you're not being true to yourself.
Yeah.
And you have that in you.
Yeah.
So allow it to come out. Just give it permission to come out. But I'll teach you the basics.
Right.
And then you adapt, you know, your thing.
And it's not like I have them make my work. You mm-hmm. know, I help them get a basic down. And then I ask them to bring in drawings or ideas or images that they like and help them do that. But that's also further down the line. That was more like when I was teaching an open studio class, which was just me assisting people with projects they were working on. But beginning classes, a lot of it is basic. So it's like, you're all going to make a ring that looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
I've also made that ring.
Yeah.
You know, things like that to basic learning.
Right. So it sounds like you're pretty busy and you do this full time. How do you stay inspired to keep creating and to support yourself with your craft?
Man, how do I keep... Well, I've always wanted to be an artist. I didn't know what that was until I got to college. But I guess I just don't know what else I would do.
Seriously.
That's like my biggest, because I don't want to give some like sappy answer to that in a way where I just think, you know, there are weeks where I'm like, I need to get out of the studio. This is too much. I'm overwhelmed. But then I take like maybe a day off and a guilt starts setting in. And I don't know if that's like, we shouldn't have that guilt as artists. We need to give ourselves more breaks. So if anything, I'm working on pushing myself to chill out a little more than I am to finding inspiration. My mom asks me that all the time. She's like, where'd you get that inspiration for this piece? Ooh, how about this inspiration? I'm like, I don't know. This is just like who I am
mm-hmm.
and it's in my brain and this is how I get it out. So I don't know what else I'd be doing. And this is what makes me happy. Sometimes I want to scream, but I am happy. And I guess, if anything, it's goals. Goals I have for myself in the future, like where I'd want to see my business going, getting to a point where I'm comfortably living off of it. Right now, it's still a little, you know,
it's sketchy.
Shaky.
I mean, how long have you been doing it? Like,
not
exclusively?
Long. I quit my job last December.
Yay.
Yeah.
I'm all about it. Yay, quit your job.
Yeah. Well, and I did that because I have a small amount of like help too if I need it.
Yeah.
And I felt that guilt set in again with that. Like I said before, I'm transparent about it. I'm really lucky. I don't have student loans. And I know that that's very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I worked through college knowing the help that my parents were giving me because I always had that guilt. But now I'm kind of thinking, okay, well, I put money away. Because I've worked my butt off the past couple of years. If that runs out, you know, I'll take it from there. But I got to the point where it was almost gone. I got a little help from my parents. And then I've been a little more steady.
All right. So where can people find your work?
Just go on my Instagram. It's Brie, like the cheese, B-R-I-E, underscore Flora. And then my website is BrieFlora.com.
And you're on Instagram?
Yep, that was my Instagram handles, Brie, underscore Flora. And then my website's through there. Some people were like, do you have a storefront? And I'm like, no.
But you do have a studio or people.
Yeah, I mean, you can contact me. I live in town in Cookeville, so it's not, you know, it's just where I work. I don't have like a display case or anything, but
if somebody wanted to come look at your work, they're more than welcome to. And you do shows throughout the year. You just did Art Prowl.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't ask her if this was okay, but I'm sure it is because we just had a meeting yesterday. But December 14th, I don't know when this is going to air.
Not then.
Well, it'll be past, but I'll be at Soulcraft again. So I'm trying to do more pop-ups in town because, you know.
Pop-ups are where it's at. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, and one more thing.
Okay.
Contact me if you are an artist and you're not part of Tennessee Craft, because for this year, I'm still the president of Tennessee Craft, and we're trying to get more involved with the community and do pop-ups.
Well.
So with other artists.
Well, I'm an artist, and I want to do a pop-up.
Yeah. Okay. Hey.
All right, Brie, this is way more fun than I thought it was going to be. So, I mean, I knew it was going to be fun, but it exceeded my expectations. And maybe that's why I wanted to have you on the show so bad. So thank you so much. And that's it.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman. And today we are chatting with Susan DeMay of Made by DeMay Ceramics. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I met you at the Off the Beaten Path Tour out in Smithville.
That's correct.
Yep. And I was really fascinated by your work, so much so that I decided to have you in today to interview you and just get the details on everything that you do. First of all, how did you get your start with ceramics?
Well, I got my start first doing just art as a kid. My mom would buy me art supplies for like Christmas presents. And even though I was brought up on a farm and did lots of work in the fields and barns with my brother and my dad, and I did lots of work in the garden with my mom and in the yard and in the house, I still had leisure time. And sometimes I would sit at the kitchen table with my art supplies and copy paintings from calendars, or I would paint something that I saw in real or draw from real life. And then when I was in elementary school, we had an art program, and I even have my kindergarten report card where it says Susan does very well with crayons and scissors and can express herself in clay. And then in high school, I had a really great high school art teacher. Her name was Barbara Klum, and I still keep up with her. In fact, she's come to visit me here in Tennessee, and I visited her there. So I had supportive adults who somehow recognized that I had some innate talent. I still have, actually, my fourth grade pinch pot. So I just remember in fourth grade that I started tracing things, but then I realized it was hard to trace with opaque paper, so I just started drawing, and I found that to be easier than tracing.
Well, we appreciate you coming out today. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I love to hear your story and get to know you better. So thank you so much.
All right, my pleasure.